Invisible Garment Podcast, where we talk about spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Today's principle is goodness. Today we'll talk about play and its importance as a spiritual practice. Knitting, one of my forms of play, also becomes a form of humiliation and embarrassment. A young man describes how goodness has been his downfall, and I'm corrected again by a kind listener. And boy, do I have a fun surprise ending for you this week. I want to start with a little reminder that we live in constant inner conflict. We're constantly conflicted between our doingness and our beingness. Of course, doing is important. One must interact with the world. We see that in babies from the get-go. They have to feel and taste and explore in order to make sense of the world. To babies, visual information without any kind of interaction is just brain gibberish. That's one fundamental argument for doingness. The other is that our society judges us by what we do, and many of us feel that we're only worthy, if we do good or if we do things that help make life better for other people. Beingness, however, is a way of cooperating with the world rather than manipulating it. Our beingness actually is our doingness. It is our purpose for existence. To be is to exist. And existence is the primary reason for taking an incarnation. So we're constantly faced with this being versus doing. Doing too much can bury beingness. And we, as spiritual practitioners, need to be aware of that. So the discussion about being and doing takes center stage when we're defining the spiritual principle of goodness. Here, in goodness, because of our use of the word in daily vocabulary, judgment enters the picture. We all have very specific ideas about what we think is good, and we're not easily swayed from our need to judge both ourselves and other people. So, rather than trying to convince you to stop judging yourself or anybody else, I want to talk about what I consider to be the key to the spiritual principle of goodness. Today, we're going to focus on play, because humans have a unique relationship with playing. All animals play, especially when they're young and developing, and it's so cute to watch young animals and young babies and young children play. Animals are considered to be the architects of play. I mean, just think about dogs at the beach. No matter how old they are, they just seem to be brought into a playful relationship with water and sand and waves and each other. Well, I think you know that we as human beings are 98.8% identical to our closest animal cousins, the primates, specifically the chimpanzees. But the primary difference between us and the chimpanzee is not really the opposing thumb. It is the length of time that it takes us to get to maturity. Chimpanzees are grown up and matured by about the age 3.5. And at that time, they stop playing quite so much. They become responsible adults who are procreating and finding food and taking care of family and working with each other. All animals, as a matter of fact, stop playing so much when they reach what we would call puberty. Humans, on the other hand, don't reach puberty for about 14, 15 years. And most of us don't reach full maturity till about 21 years. And some of us don't reach emotional maturity ever. But definitely, it takes 30 years or so. It takes a lot of experience for a human to reach full maturity. So humans play for a lot longer. Our childhoods are really spread out, and in normal and healthy childhoods, we get to play a lot. That is our job, playing and pretending. And that is when we develop the imagination. And the imagination is what really separates us from all of the other kingdoms, from the plant kingdom, the rock kingdom, the animal kingdom. It is our use of imagination. Lack of play, conversely, in a human creates some very tragic results. There's a guy called Dr. Stuart Brown who discovered that mass murderers, for the most part, were denied play. He started this study when he was asked by the governor of Texas to study Charles Whitman, who was the guy who went up in the Texas Tower with the gun and shot people. And he was, up to that point, the mass murderer who had killed the most people in this country ever, I guess. And the more he talked with this man, the more he realized that the guy had never been allowed to play. His mother was abusive, and he was just simply not allowed any kind of normal, playful, imagination-filled childhood. So as a result of that, Dr. Brown decided he wanted to study other murderers and got permission and funding from the state of Texas to study other murderers. And he found that these people, for the most part, did not have playful childhoods. Play was not introduced into their lives. And so their imagination was severely hindered. The development of their ability to imagine a world and create it was hindered. So those of us who insist on being judgmental, we can agree that mass murder is not goodness. A judgment that we can place on mass murder, that is not goodness. And if Dr. Brown's observations tell us anything, they tell us that the lack of play creates not goodness in us. So what is play? Well, play is a situation in which we're relatively safe. Not that we don't, some of our play is actually a little bit dangerous to our bodies, but we don't feel very playful when we don't feel safe. You know, if a gun's pointed to your head, you're not likely to be playful. Play is imaginal. It's full of imagination. The urge to play is pre-verbal. Play is fun. Play is voluntary. If you're forced to play, it becomes not really play. And play seems to collapse or extend time. It works outside of the normal time frame. And most importantly, play is an activity that creates new neural connections. It makes us adaptive. It gives what our scientists call brain plasticity. We need to remember this as we grow old. Those of you who are complaining about your memory, losing your memory, perhaps you're just not playing enough. You're not keeping your brain active and plastic enough. Because play is actually a state of mind. It's not necessarily a doingness. It's a state of mind in which you're allowing your brain to create new connections, to create new synapses, to imagine a different reality, and then work toward achieving it. Any game can become contentious and competitive if the urge to win dominates over the desire to play. It becomes no longer play. It calls up an old pattern rather than creating brain plasticity, which develops new synapses and keeps us from being frozen into destructive patterns. Now, what does all this play talk have to do with goodness? Well, if you remember in The Invisible Garment, I said that goodness is godness as it is enacted in human beings. And if you read anything about the development of the universe, almost every author refers to cosmic play, as if in the development of the universe, this being that we refer to as God, this creator, this source, this incredibly creative force that has developed the entire cosmos, seems to play with itself. It does a little of this, it does a little of that, it makes jumps, it makes leaps. The cosmos, the history of the cosmos, is filled with what we call cosmic play. And that's what we do within our own brains. We allow ourselves to develop imagination. We allow ourselves to invent. We allow ourselves to become more nuanced and more sophisticated in our imagination. And what does that do to us? It creates compassion, believe it or not. It creates a way to expand our arena of experience, even if it's fantasy or imagination. And it literally creates brain patterns that open our perspective and allow us to be sympathetic, empathetic, and compassionate. In the podcast on generosity, we talked about how we gather experiences, how Nancy Dannison, in her near-death experience, came back with the message that our only purpose for living is to gather experiences in the name of Source. Gather experiences so Source will know what it feels like to be alive. We give those experiences to the great cosmic soup that Creator is cooking up in the cosmic kitchen. So after generosity, we advance toward goodness. Goodness influences us to create fun and pleasure and glee and pure enjoyment of life to this soup. And this soup feeds us all. Now it's time to talk about knitting. And as you know, knitting is a form of play, for me at least, and I think if you speak with any knitter, you're going to find that they say the same thing. They love to knit, and that is their form of play. One who uses knitting is highly experimental and imaginative. I, for example, have a great deal of trouble following a pattern to the letter. I get a pattern, I see the pattern, I work with the pattern, but I just hardly ever stick with the pattern. I do not know what is wrong with me. I guess I'm not what you would call a good girl, because I just don't obey the rules. What I do is I start creating my own version of the pattern. And that, of course, sometimes puts me into trouble. But I must think that trouble is fun, because I always go there. I always knit myself into trouble. And then I have to imagine my way out of it. I have to think my way out of this corner that I've knitted myself into. And then I have to execute a new plan. It's like I just can't sit down and be a good girl and knit the pattern. I'm there right now. My mother, who is 93 years old, and therefore, in my opinion, gets to ask for anything that she wants, wants a lap quilt, a lap blanket to throw over herself. She spends a lot of time in her recliner because she has diabetes and her feet have an ankle swell. And so she needs to keep her feet elevated. So she spends a lot of time in her recliner and it gets cold. So she wants a blanket to throw over her. And so I decided to knit her a blanket for her birthday this year. So I found this wonderful pattern. It's called the 10-stitch pattern, and I'll put a link to it on the podcast notes in case you want to look at it. You're only working with 10 stitches at a time, and it knits round and round and round, sort of like in a square labyrinth type shape. And I love knitting things that are round and labyrinthian, and you know, because they have like symbology for me, and I think I'm knitting like something important if I'm doing symbols. So anyway, I chose this pattern. I looked at the yarn that she recommended, but rather than going with the yarn she recommended, I decided to choose my own yarn. So I went to my favorite online knitting store, which is knitpicks.com, and I'll put a link there too. You got to go to knitpicks.com because the yarn is so wonderful and the prices are so good. I ordered the amount that the pattern called for in the various colors that I thought would work together and would work in my mother's living room. What I forgot to do was notice that the yarn was, all the yarns that I ordered were like different sizes. So I have some bulky sizes. I have some normal sizes. I have some fingering weight sizes. I have all different kinds of sizes. So I couldn't just use one strand of yarn at a time. I have to use multiple strands of yarn at the time so that everything will look to be about the same size. So what did that mean? That meant that I ran out of yarn. That meant that I had to order more yarn. But waiting for the more yarn, then I spread out the blanket and I realized the blanket is not going to be the right shape. I wanted a long, skinny blanket so that it would fit just right over her body while she's on the recliner. And this one is looking more square than long and skinny. So now I have to figure out how to alter the pattern to make it long and skinny, which I can't figure out how to do because the corners are knit in a very specific way. You know, I could just knit more on the top and more on the bottom, but that would ruin the pattern. I don't know how to explain this to you. I'm in a corner. I'm going to have to imagine my way out of this corner, and then I'm going to have to get the right yarn and the right size yarn and the right weight yarn and the right color yarn to finish the pattern. But to me, this is play rather than frustration. To me, this is how a knitter has a good time. Now, as you know, in this section, which we call the politics of ethical behavior, we talk about what your life would be like, what kinds of decisions you would make if today's principle were the primary influence in your decision making. And so we run back into that problem that I was talking about earlier, where judgment enters when goodness is involved, because we all have our own specific definitions of what goodness looks like. And goodness looks like certain kinds of behavior. For most people who have goodness in their invisible garment, goodness looks like acting nice. It looks like being friendly. It looks like doing good things, nice things for other people. But sometimes goodness leads to sort of a doormat syndrome. It creates a situation in which we feel that we're being taken advantage of. You know, we're nice to people, but they're not nice back to us. Or we do nice things for people that doesn't get appreciated. So I've talked to a lot of people who have goodness in their charts, and they struggle with it. Recently, I was talking to an amazing young man who's an artist who has sort of won my heart. And he was talking about how his goodness is a source of broken heart for him, because so many times in his life he's tried to reach out to people, tried to touch people, tried to help people. And he had to admit that part of the reason that he tried to do that was because of his own longing to be liked by people, which could be, very, very difficult if you're not getting back what you're looking for when you're being nice to people. But when I started talking to him about playfulness, goodness doesn't necessarily show up for you by entering a room and being nice to everybody. But goodness does show up for you when you enter a room and create a playful atmosphere within the room, where you influence the environment in the room by introducing play and laughter and lightness. It takes the judgment off. It takes the self-judgment off. And it takes the external judgment off. It takes the pressure off of you to try to behave according to some external set of rules that you may not even know. Because all you're really doing is bringing lightness, bringing laughter, bringing playfulness into a situation. When you start bringing joy into a room, you know that goodness is acting through you. When you start noticing that people lighten up because you have come into a situation or a circumstance, because you are entering the discussion, you know that goodness is working through you. This is a real problem for spiritual practitioners. Most spiritual practitioners think that you should be serious and you should be deep and you should only say important things and you should only be always compassionate and helpful. When actually what I'm saying to you today is laughter is compassionate and helpful. The decision to make things lighter is compassionate and helpful. I haven't gotten a lot of feedback since I posted the Generosity podcast, although one very helpful friend did point out to me that I very, very carefully misspelled clapotie for you. I spelled it C-L-A-P-O-T-I. It's C-L-A-P-O-T-I-S. Pardon my French, as they say. So that's corrected. So rather than talking about feedback that I got from last week, what I want to do today is tell you that wahoo, I finally climbed another technological mountain and figured out how to put these podcasts on iTunes. So now, if you go to iTunes and you search for the word Connie, the name Connie Kaplan, put Connie Kaplan in your little search name, these podcasts will all come up. And you can listen to them on iTunes. You can put them on your iPod and listen to them when you walk. You can tell your friends the easiest way to get to these podcasts is to go to iTunes and look for Connie Kaplan's podcast. But also, doing this required that I create a different way to put the podcasts up on the internet. So when you go to turtledreamers.com, please click on podcast again. Even if you've subscribed before, subscribe again, just in case, because I'm not sure if your subscription necessarily transfers over. But subscribe again, and you can subscribe to an RSS feed, or you can subscribe to the regular, you know, QuickTime feed. But I think when you subscribe again, that's going to now take you directly to iTunes, and you're going to hear it through iTunes. So I'm very excited about that. And then here is my last request, and this is most important. On iTunes, please write a review. Please, please, please write a review. And tell your friends to please, please, please write a review, because iTunes likes you more if you have reviews. They don't like you so much if nobody ever reviews you. And, you know, because I'm a good girl, I want iTunes to like me. No, I'm just kidding. It's just a great way to help other people find the podcast. The more feedback we have, the more reviews we have, the closer up it goes on the top to the top of the iTunes podcast list. And so your giveaway, your help to me and your help to your friends would be to help them find these podcasts. And so you do that by writing a review. Thank you very much. I realize I'm asking a lot of technical stuff from you this week, but hey, it is nothing compared to the learning curves I've scaled to get to this place. So please, thank you. As always, to Kevin Brennan for the music. Be sure to go to Kevin's website at www.fboo.com. F as in Frank, boo as in boo-boo, fboo.com. He's a talented, incredibly generous, kind, artistic genius. And everyone should know Kevin and his amazing wife, Robin. So please support them and their company in any way that you can. Buy their music and tell other people about them. And thank you, Kevin. Finally, I have a confession. Okay, I'm not such a good girl. I'm doing a naughty thing. Your surprise ending this week is a song for which I have not been able to get permission to play. I've tried. Can't find the writers, can't find the performers, can't find the publisher. So, don't tell. Or better yet, go to iTunes and buy the song for 99 cents to repay them for letting us use and enjoy it at the end of our podcast this week. I wanted to find a playful song, and this one just kept popping out of my 20th century brain. Memories from the 60s, when things were simpler, and we used to be amused by sillier things. Yes, for those of you who are too young to remember the 60s, we actually bought this record and sang along, and then sang it to each other. And we thought it was fun. Try it. Ladies and gentlemen, the Rebops bring you
the name game. Shirley,
Shirley, Shirley, Boberly, Banana, Banana, Boberly, Peepa, Momerly, Shirley.
Lame.
I said, now let's play a game. I bet you I could make a rhyme out of anybody's name. The first letter of the name I treated like it wasn't there, but a B or an F or an N will appear. And then I say Bo at a B, then I say the name, then banana, banana, and a Bo. Then I say the name again with an F, very plain, then a B, Fi, and a Mo. Then I say the name again with an M this time, and there isn't any name that I can rhyme.
How about Arnold?
Arnold, 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 Bo, Bono, Banana, Banana, Bo, Bono, B, Fi, Mo, Mono. Arnold. The first two letters are ever the same. Drop them both and say the name. Like Bob, Bob with a B, Bob, Bob, or Fred. Fred dropped the F, O, Red, or Mary, Mary dropped the M's, Mo, Eric. That's the only rule that is contrary. Okay?
Okay.
Now say Bo.
Bo.
Now Tony with a B.
Bo.
Then Banana, Fanta, and Fo.
Banana, Fanta, Fo.
Then you say the name again with an F, very plain.
Tony.
Then a say the name again with an M this time.
Money.
And there isn't any name that you can rhyme. Everybody do Tony.
Tony, Tony, Bo, Boni, Bo, Nana, Banana, Bo, Phony, Beep, Five, Mo, Moni. Tony.
Very good. Let's do Billy.
Billy, Billy, Bo, Illy, Bo, Nana, Banana, Bo, Billy, Beep, Five, Mo, Millie. Billy.
Very good. Let's do Marsha.
Marsha, Marsha, Bo, Marsha, Banana, Banana, Bo, Farsha, Beep, Marsha.
A little trick with Nick.
Nick, Nick, Bo, Bick, Banana, Banana, Bo, Bick, Beep, Five, Mo, Mick. Nick.
The name.
Until next time, laugh a lot. Sweet dreams.
Hi, Bird.
Hello.
Want me to teach you the name game?
Hello.
Yeah, okay, here we go. Bird, bird, bo-erd, banana, banana, bo-furred, fee-fi, mo-merd.